Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. Last week, we began a conversation with two former White House advisors who are also co-founders of the nonprofit group No Labels. Their objective is to fundamentally rethink politics in a way that gets past the current gridlock and allows individual politicians the ability to work together. Today, we hear the second part of my discussion with former Clinton advisor Bill Galston and former George W. Bush advisor Mark McKinnon. And we start with a peek into another country's political system, a system that they argue we sorely need to learn from. So to get you into the spirit, here's a clip from the weekly event that Galston and McKinnon would like us to emulate, Question Time in the British House of Commons. You'll hear the leader of the opposition, followed by Prime Minister David Cameron, who is contending with some jeers.
Mr. Speaker, why is it right to have this judge-led approach to the scandal in the press, but wrong for the scandal in the banks?
Well, I think there is a very profound difference between the circumstances with the Leveson inquiry and the circumstances with this inquiry.
Bill Galston, there's a little piece of what goes on in London every week. The Prime Minister gets these really sort of tough questions. You can hear people sort of jeer at him or, you know, applaud. What is the advantage of bringing that to Congress, to the president?
Two things. First of all, there is an actual dialogue between the majority and the minority, the government and the opposition. And the leader of the government, the prime minister in Britain, or as we're recommending, the president of the United States, actually has to hear those tough questions and respond to them and do so in full view of the American people. We believe deeply that government would work better if all parties are together in the same room. They're going to be partisan. They're going to hurl tough questions and charges at each other. But we're better off as a democracy if the leaders are actually hearing those questions and charges and responding to them. Number two, when the leader of the government enters that room, he, or in the case of Margaret Thatcher, she, had better be really, really well briefed and up to date on everything that's going on in his or her administration. And that also contributes to better government. If you have to reach out constantly to people in what we call the executive branch to find out what the problems are, what's going on, what are the really tough issues that the prime minister or the president ought to be aware of and ought to be prepared to speak to. That also is a force for better government.
Now, Mark McKinnon, you have been inside the White House. You know how carefully the president is handled. If we look at President Obama, obviously there's a lot of attention to making sure the press secretary, Jay Carney, says the right things. Can you imagine a scenario in which the president would agree to be subject to the same kind of questions and have to come up with the sort of knowledge that David Cameron has to every single week?
Well, I think if you're a confident leader, you can be and you should be. And, you know, another one of the recommendations that we have is that there should be a press conference at least once a month. As you know, now modern presidents can go months and even years without having even a press conference. It's the obligation and the duty of the president of the United States to report regularly to the public.
And you also say in this vein that we have to agree on a set of facts. Different opinions are fine, but different facts are not. And I have to say, those kinds of conflicting facts have very much been in evidence this campaign season. Politicians often reference the Congressional Budget Office, but their presentation of the CBO's facts can be so radically different that an average voter may have real trouble sort of trying to discern the truth. So as an illustration, I'm going to play an ad from President Obama on Medicare, and then we will hear an ad from Governor Romney on exactly the same topic.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
It's a promise that was made long ago. You work hard, pay in, your Medicare benefits are guaranteed. But Mitt Romney would break that promise, replace your benefits with a voucher. Insurance companies could just keep raising rates. Instead of a guarantee, seniors could pay $6,400 more a year. AARP says the plan Mitt Romney supports undermines Medicare. Mitt Romney, an end to the Medicare promise.
So there's an ad for President Obama saying, if you like Medicare, you should not vote for Mitt Romney. He's going to take it away. And now here is an ad from the Romney campaign called Paid In. And it essentially says that Obama has stolen Medicare money for Obamacare. Let's listen.
You paid into Medicare for years. Every paycheck. Now when you need it, Obama has cut $716 billion from Medicare. Why? To pay for Obamacare. So now the money you paid for your guaranteed health care is going to a massive new government program that's not for you. The Romney Ryan plan protects Medicare benefits for today's seniors and strengthens the plan for the next generation.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
So Mark McKinnon, here's the Romney campaign saying that the Obama people are taking money from a program that was for you to a program that is not for you. You talked before about the sort of vast nonpartisan middle. How was anybody in that vast nonpartisan middle supposed to make any sense of these two ads?
Well, they can't. They can't. And that's the problem. It's no wonder why the American people are so confused and why they've lost so much trust in not only in government, but in the parties as well. That's why the Congress only has a 10% approval rating. But people are leaving the parties in droves as well because they don't feel like anybody's telling them the truth anymore. So that's why we had this idea about a nonpartisan leader like the Comptroller General delivering on an annual basis a fiscal update, and that the president, the vice president, cabinet members, and everybody has to attend that. And I think there's a component of this proposal where we even have everybody has to sign off on it so that we have a common set of facts that everybody's dealing from in order to express their opinions.
Bill Galston, what do you make of these two ads and also the way in which people sort of twist the facts, even from organizations like the Congressional Budget Office that are sort of nominally not partisan?
Well, what makes this so hard, I think, for average listeners is that there are elements of truth in both of those ads. And what the political parties are doing and the campaigns are doing, they are cherry-picking the facts that are most friendly to their case. They're putting them forward, and they're ignoring the contrary facts that might help the other party more. And what the American people really need is a full and honest discussion of the question. Let's take Medicare as an example. There are some facts. The fact of the matter is that in the long run, the benefits that Medicare is now committed to paying vastly exceed the revenues now scheduled to come into the system. That's a fact. The Medicare actuaries make that statement every year, and people who study the policy know that's true. So then the question is, what are you going to do about that? And the Republicans are very eager to deny that there can be a revenue component to stabilizing Medicare for the long term. And the Democrats are equally unwilling to accept the possibility of a structural change, such as Romney and Ryan have proposed and some Democrats have proposed as well.
So, Bill Galston, let's say none of the reforms that you have talked about are adopted for some reason and we sort of continue on the way we are going right now. I mean, eventually the numbers, as you say, become the reality. What is going to happen if neither Republicans nor Democrats deal with this in what you consider sort of a fiscally responsible way?
Well, with every passing year that we don't deal with our long-term problems, it becomes more difficult to do so. And when we're right up against the impossibility of continuing, the abrupt changes that would be needed at that point would be very painful, very destabilizing, and would produce a popular revolt. And at that point, the people would say, why didn't anybody warn us? So our real choices are making modest changes now, putting us on a glide path to a better future, as opposed to continuing on its current course until, like the sort of the Roadrunner cartoons, you know, Wile E. Coyote is just walking along the cliff. He steps over the cliff. He keeps on walking on air. Then he looks down and suddenly down he goes,
right,
you know, in one fatal plunge. And it is that abrupt change in policies and in people's expectations that is, I think, the worst threat to come out of our gridlock right now.
Mark McKinnon, you talk about it, Known Labels having this annual fiscal report to Congress. And I wonder, should we have somebody who is empowered to be even more important than that, a sort of a Ross Perot kind of person, like you mentioned a comptroller general, but somebody who like gets on C-SPAN with charts and says, look, this is how it's going. Here are the facts. The Republicans, the Democrats, they can choose not to deal with them, but I'm here to make my annual or semi-annual or monthly report to you, the American people.
That's a good idea. I think we need to add one more bullet here on our plan, Bill. You know, I mean, it could be a person or maybe even members of both parties that, that have been selected to a committee that is a permanent committee, has a permanent status and reports either annually or semi-annually. But I think that's a great idea.
Our proposal already includes the fact that this fiscal report in our proposal annual has to be delivered to a joint session of Congress, and that officials from both the executive branch and the Congress have to attend, and that it would be nationally televised. So we're doing what we can, even within the framework of our own proposal, to ensure that this is not just a neutral scorekeeper, but someone who enjoys some real public visibility.
And Bill Galston, do you think there's any possibility that some of these hard facts, these hard truths that we've been talking about, are actually going to get touched on this year in the debates when there is a moderator who has access to those numbers and figures that are tough?
It depends on the skill and persistence of the moderator and the willingness to make oneself unpopular with one or both candidates. And as we see over and over again, when moderators or hosts of radio and television programs are determined to get candidates to answer questions that they really don't want to answer, things can get really sticky. I think a lot of people in the media are reluctant to put themselves in that position because the media has credibility problems of its own. Not public radio, of course, but nearly everybody else. And so it's a tough job, but as the saying goes, somebody has to do it.
And let's touch on just one more point that you have here in ways to make Congress work. And I think this is a really interesting one. It's fix the filibuster, require real filibusters. Now, this is really interesting because we hear people talking all the time about the threat of a Republican filibuster, the threat of a Democratic filibuster. But you don't really see people actually standing up on the floor of the Senate and talking for 13 hours, you know, about their mom's apple pie recipe or reading through the phone book or whatever. Mark McKinnon, what has happened to the filibuster?
Well, that's a great point. And what's happening now is exactly what you said. It's just the threat of a filibuster. You don't even have to filibuster anymore. And that's precisely what our form says, that if you want a filibuster, you have to actually go on the floor and filibuster. When filibusters were initially adopted, I think that there were like one or two a year, and now I think Bill helped me on these numbers, but they're happening many, many times a week.
More than 100 per session, which is extraordinary.
So it's just become a sort of move, a threat that doesn't get executed, but it's enough to shut down debate.
That's right, and that's why we have a two-pronged proposal. First of all, we're not going to eliminate the filibuster, but you can no longer filibuster to prevent a piece of legislation from reaching the floor of the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to prevent it from passing, okay, you can try, but you cannot prevent the Senate from debating important questions. That's the first reform we're making. And secondly, no more virtual filibusters. If you want a filibuster, you have to be prepared to put your bodies across the railroad tracks of the legislative train and stop it that way.
Right.
You've got to take responsibility. You have to show up on the floor. You have to hold the floor. You have to do what Mr. Smith did when he famously went to Washington. So you really have to be prepared to take the responsibility for what you're doing in full view of the American people.
And a final question for both of you, since you've both been inside the White House. How frustrating is it for the staff, maybe for the president himself, inside the White House to live with a Congress that maybe isn't in session a lot of the time, isn't coming to agreements on the budget, is having these filibusters? is not taking up or down votes on the president's nominees for all sorts of different positions. Mark McKinnon, let me start with you.
Oh, it's unimaginably frustrating. I mean, you campaign for years and you get elected to the most important job in the world, and then you're completely handcuffed and you can't do anything.
And Bill Galston, you've been inside the Clinton White House. Mm-hmm. How frustrating is it from your perspective?
Well, I was involved in some of those nominations processes.
Right.
Frustrating doesn't begin to describe it, but it's worse than frustrating. It's dangerous. I'll give you an example. President Obama took office in early 2009 with an extraordinary economic crisis. And for months, he couldn't get the senior associates to the Secretary of Treasury approved by the Senate. Secretary of the Treasury, Tim Geithner, was home alone during one of the most critical periods our economy has faced in three quarters of a century. Mm. That goes beyond presidential frustration. That goes to the heart of what the president is responsible for in our system, and it cannot be allowed to continue.
I was just going to say, I was appointed by President Bush to the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which oversees Radio Free Europe and other broadcasting entities of the United States government, and I never got confirmed in 3 years.
And there it is, evidence of that stalemated process. We have been talking about what it would take to turn our political system into something that really works. And I've been joined by Bill Galston, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and former aide to President Clinton, and Mark McKinnon, vice chairman of Hill and Knowlton Strategies and former advisor to President George W. Bush. They are co-founders of the nonprofit No Labels, whose proposals you can see at nolabels.org. Bill Galston and Mark McKinnon, thank you so much for this great discussion.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Remember that you can learn more about our guests or link to our podcasts at wgbh.org/innovationhub, where you can also find out how to join us at our live Innovation Hub in Boston on September 27th. I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub. Let's work together. Now, people, because together we